Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck hailing from my home in Kansas City, Missouri. Yes, friends, I am back. And of course, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness, and I'm here with my buddies.
Hello there. This is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton coming to you from Durham, North Carolina, and it's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it's very definitely another beautiful day in my consciousness as well. I'm also at the Durham End of the Table, and as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a very special virtual Unity ministry, and our name is the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.com, and we spell Universal, Y-O-U, Universal, because it's about your spiritual growth.
Right. And I stuck in .org because now we have the .org also. And you can reach us at ucfyp.org. And we welcome you with lots of great information and ideas and resources.
Yeah. And of course, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you'll find my calendar, which FYI, I've got things to add to it now. So I'm going to have to do that today, I think. And of course, my weekly blog, The Absolute Word. And for those of you who experienced an outage, my website, paulhasselbeck.com, it is back up and running, and I am grateful.
And the same is true with the podcast site. That was down for a little while, but it is now back up as well. So we are fully functional.
And Cher and I are both grateful that it wasn't something we did to cause our sites to blow up. It was something on the company end. Yay! This is going to be episode 2 or part 2 of How Meditation Works and Science-Based Effective Meditations. You can find it on Huberman Labs, and Dr. Andrew Huberman is the person who does that. And specifically, you'd want to look for podcast number 96.
And I put a link on the part one, and it will continue as long as we're doing this. I'll have the link on our website for that podcast so people can find it quickly. You could just click a link. And I want to make sure I have the right link. It was episode number
96.
Okay, so I'll make sure we have the correct one.
Excellent. So let's get romping. At the end of the first episode, we were talking already a little bit about exteroception and interoception. We're going to get into that a little bit more this week because there's certain things I want to share. And of course, Bill's going to share what he calls them.
I call them inspirations and experiences, and we'll talk more about that too.
Yeah, what's interesting about inspirations and experiences, they're all done internally, but experiences is a perception of external things, and inspirations are a perception of internal things. And in fact, I think that's where we decided we would start. Andrew Huberman says something really interesting that I had to stop and think about. Sensation is distinct from perception. I'm going to say that again. Sensation is distinct from perception. Perception is the sensation that we happen to be paying attention to. Perception is the sensation that we happen to be paying attention to. The way perception works is that you and I have so-called spotlights of attention. So let me explain that a little bit. So if you think of flashlights, and we're holding a flashlight, and I'm holding one in my left hand and the right hand, I can focus them on the same thing, or I can focus one on one thing and one on the other things. For example, I'm sitting here doing the podcast. I can see my picture. I can see Bill and Cher's image here on my screen, and I can see my notes, and that would be exteroception. But at the same time, I can hear my stomach growling. I can feel my stomach growling. So seeing the images is exteroception, and feeling my stomach growling and having a spotlight attention on that, that would be interoception. Did you guys want to add anything?
I have a thought about just perception, what he says about perception, because interestingly, we can all be looking at the same thing, but our perception of it could be very different. as well. And so recognizing that the exteroception that he talks about, I have to put my tongue around that word. When we talk about perception, we are seeing things, and in our own awareness, we seem to think that's the reality, but it's our reality, the way we are perceiving it.
Yes. And interesting thing about that, I saw something in one of my feeds today, and it was talking about we perceive colors, but the things we see that are colored actually have no color, in the, especially in the way that we see them, because the way we're perceiving the wavelengths of light is being interpreted in our brains as red or green or whatever. And this sort of supports what Cher was saying. I could say something is red, but another person might see it as a different shade of red. And of course, we know the evidence from people who are colorblind that can't see red or green. And it's just a very fascinating process of how our bodily sensations are interpreted in our brains or in our consciousness. So we have these two spotlights of perception, and we can split that or we can merge them. And I hope you understood that from my example. Now, here's another interesting thing. When we close our eyes, we shut down one of the major avenues for sensory input. In fact, somewhere in the article, he says that 40% of our brain, not our consciousness, not our mind, but 40% of our physical brain is devoted to vision. So when we close our eyes, we have pretty much shut down the possibility of exteroception. But what happens then is we're focusing on interoception. And this is why, friends, we close our eyes when we pray. This is why we close our eyes when we meditate, to shut down that major input so we can be more motivated by our interoception rather than our exteroception.
And you know what's interesting about what you're saying too, Paul, is when you think about it, the people who are sight challenged, even blind from birth, have what's called echo perception or echolocation, and they can sense things that way in terms of the distance where they are between things and that kind of thing. So we are equipped with some type of sensitivity, even though we do not have the vision.
The interesting fact about that, in addition to what you said, is essentially the parts of the brain that are for vision in a non-vision person become dedicated to hearing, for example, and that would be that echo perception.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? That's incredible.
It just blows my mind. So we can think of a line, and at one end of the line is interoception, and the opposite end of the line is exteroception. And it's a continuum. And so what we're looking at here and helping you understand it, and we're going to tell you why you want to understand this in a minute, is that we want to be able to have more control over whether we're being interoceptive or exteroception. So let's define interoception. It's everything we sense at the level of our skin and inward. And then exteroception is everything that is outside or beyond the confines of our skin. This is where we're going to kind of make this practical, and we're going to invite you to do something. And maybe if you do it now, you won't discern it, but after the show, you need to know whether you tend towards interoception and what's going on inside of you, and exteroception, what's going on beyond your skin. And the way to tell that is to notice if you're a person who tends to be very in touch with your bodily sensation from the skin inwards, like you can easily notice your breathing. You can actually notice your heartbeat, stuff like that. So if that's primary for you, you're primarily interoceptive. On the other hand, if you tend to be someone who is less in touch with the interoceptive things I said, the heartbeat and all of that, then you're probably an exteroceptive person. This feels like it's getting really technical.
One thing I'm thinking is intuitive wisdom. That would be an interoceptive ability. And if some people are very in tune with their intuitive wisdom, it's like they can just be still a moment and have just know something. Yes. And other people almost look at you like you're crazy when you even talk about that concept. So I'm thinking people who are in touch with that intuitive wisdom part of their being or intuition, those kind of things, would be focused more on the interoception.
In my opinion, they are. And that's what I call my inner knower.
Yes.
And for me, where it's located in my body is around the solar plexus, but it's not exterior, it's interior. I know from that point rather knowing from my brain, I guess is the right way.
I'm wondering if our extrasensory abilities like telepathy and clairvoyance then would be interoception?
So I'm not really, this is going to sound funny, in touch with whether they are or not. But Bill, Bill and Cher, since you teach about that now, I mean, you'd be the one to pin the tail on that donkey. So is that what your sensation is?
It seems so, because if you're clairvoyant, you are connecting with the unmanifest, the ethereal, and not with the physical. And the physical outside of your skin is not where you're getting the information.
Yeah. And interesting, as I'm thinking about that, different types might be different focuses, because I'm thinking about can't remember what it's called. What is it called when you're somewhere and I can draw?
Remote viewing,
you're using your introspective to connect, but you're using your exteroception because it's a physical place. And you're connecting with that and you're drawing it on paper. So that would almost be one of those hybrid ones.
Yeah. So there is hybrid between. So there's the extremes, which we got to get defined. And then we can do what you just did, Cher, identify where a hybrid might exist for a person.
And what's interesting about that, folks, is that remote viewers pick up the actual sensitivity of a scene, a location, but they've never been there. So they've never seen it. They That's aren't true. Looking at it. It's all interior.
Yes.
So that would be. Yeah,
so it's
right.
It's interreception, and which brings up the whole idea of what Einstein called spooky action at a distance. When you think about it, because it's about non-locality there.
I would call it spooky awareness at a distance.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So I want to reemphasize this point. When we close our eyes, interoception increases. So just for a moment, as you're listening,
unless you're driving.
Well, please don't drive when doing this. Okay. So we're going to have a few seconds of silence, and everyone's going to close our eyes and notice if you can perceive things within you you weren't noticing a moment ago. Okay, so open your eyes. And for me, I have tinnitus, but when I'm working and talking, I'm not aware of it. But when I close my eyes, that becomes the dominant thing. I hear, but I'm not hearing in the traditional sense because it's an internal process. How about you guys?
I'm thinking I thought something interesting, which I guess was interior, because my brain, it's like it opens up. But what I thought was your experience when you close your eyes can also tell you which of these is your dominant, because I bet for some people, they became much more aware of exterior sounds and maybe the pressure of the environment against their being. And so there was all this exterior that all of a sudden became very focused. While for others, the interior, like your tinnitus or just the thought processes would. So that in itself can become your personal test of what your dominant style is.
Well, thank you for doing that, because that was going to be something I would suggest. So that's exactly it. If you're exteroceptive, when you close your eyes and you tend to hear everything beyond you, then you're probably leaning there. Mm-hmm. And so Bill, did you want to share anything?
Yeah, the only thing I felt was Sharon and I just had breakfast about 2.5 hours ago and felt a little bit of the indigestion.
Oh,
okay. Oh, but really not okay.
No, that's not okay. That's definitely, I thought he was going to say he was ready for lunch.
Yeah. Well, that was another choice.
Could I say one more thing here?
Yeah.
That when we become aware of our dominant style or preference, it's really a preference is what it is, a preference that we have used so much, it's become our go-to. Recognize that you can also strengthen the opposite by putting yourself in positions to use it. And I'm sure he's going to go into that probably, but it just struck me that that's something important to say, right?
That is really important to say. And it's actually something we touched on the last time. And I thought we would be able to touch on more this time, but we're not quite there yet because we're running out of time. So one thing I want to say is if you're naturally interoceptive or naturally exteroceptive, that is demonstrating your default mode network, the default mode network on how your physical brain is working, not your mind. So those are neurological pathways you have developed in the process of having one more important than the other. And let me be clear, one is not better than the other, but knowing which you are can be very helpful in our process of choosing what meditation practice we're going to choose. And there's another topic he has on here, which is really interesting. I'm just going to make this a teaser. There was research done, published in the journal Science, which is one of the top three journals in the world. And it was entitled, "A Wandering Mind is an Unhappy Mind."
Wandering. Make sure people heard you, not wondering, but wandering. W-A-N-D-E-R. Just so people understood the word.
Because I don't know what I said.
No, I think you said it. It's just that when you only hear it, they may misunderstand.
A wandering mind, W-A-N-D-E-R, is an unhappy mind. And we'll share about that in a future episode. But next week, be sure and come back for part three so that you learn what to do in terms of your meditation practice and your understanding of whether you're interoceptive or exteroceptive, or whether you're more experience focused or inspirience focused, as Bill shared. Okay, it's time for us to pivot to the Absolute Word, which is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, has been used with permission. This comes from Sunday, March 5th. The word is dominion. I claim dominion to direct the course of my life. I claim dominion to direct the course of my life. While I may not be able to control what happens in my life, I am always free to determine how I respond. Through my divine faculty of dominion, I have 100% authority over my thoughts, feelings, and actions. Only I decide what to think, say, and do. If a thought of fear or powerlessness arises, I remember dominion as well as the faculties of divine wisdom, understanding, and strength. They are fully mine, whether I'm organizing my day or moving forward after making a life-altering decision. The principle of dominion is always mine to claim and use. Knowing this, I move through life with quiet confidence. I am secure in myself and in the knowledge I am fully divine and fully human. I expand my life into a field of limitless possibilities and potential. I claim dominion to direct the course of my life. And I want to add a little something to this. I was working with somebody, and it might have been the three of us working with someone. I don't really recall, friends, but they used a different synonym for dominion. Yeah, I usually call it like personal authority. They chose the word agency. And I love that word in relation to dominion. Dominion gives us personal agency. And so with that, this is Paul Hasselbeck signing off. Thank you for listening. Thank you, my friends.
Thank you so much. And we'd love being a part of this and wish all of you well. This is Cher Holton saying bye.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holden saying bye as well. And the three of us invite you to claim dominion to expand your field of infinite potential in this life.